City, yeah. Because it's a warm-up.
Good morning, Green Bay Packer Nation. This is Railbird Central on CheeseheadTV.com. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. And kicking off the show right away, we have our guest on the line, Rob Reichel of the book Aaron Rodgers, Leader of the Pack. Rob, how are you this morning?
Good, Brian. How are you?
Very good. Can't complain. Thank you for coming on the show. We're here to talk about your newly released book, and there seemed to be fortuitous timing of this book. As an observer, the timing was pretty perfect that Aaron Rodgers just won the Super Bowl MVP, and just months, weeks later, here comes the book on him. Can you talk about the timing of the book and how it came to be?
Yeah, we actually weren't as bright maybe as it appears to be. We were a little bit good and a little bit lucky with it, Brian. We were talking through the postseason about doing a book on whoever won the Super Bowl, and clearly the only way I was going to write that book for Triumph was if the Packers won. They've got various writers for them in various cities, and they only wanted one Super Bowl book on whichever team won. Well, once Green Bay got to the championship game, I started the Super Bowl, but I started thinking, yeah, this is probably going to happen. And at the time, Brian, they wanted a book just on the 2010 season and the 2010 Packers. So I was getting my stuff in order for that book. And about Wednesday, Brian, of Super Bowl week, so about 4 days before the game, they kind of shifted gears and said, what do you think if we did the book strictly on Aaron? And by the way, you've got about a week after the game ends to have us the book. So from my perspective, Brian, it was Scramble City, but it certainly made the most sense to kind of center the book on Aaron. He's clearly a rising star in the league, a central figure, of that 2010 success. And then what I tried to do, Brian, is weave, not only his personal story, but then, weave everything from 2010 inside the project and just kind of build it around Aaron. Mm-hmm. So, it was, like I said, kind of a scramble job to get it done and try to get it into readers' hands by, I want to say it was out in mid-March, Brian. So we had it on shelves within 5 weeks or something after the Super Bowl. So that's a credit to my publishing company, because they did turn the project around pretty quickly.
I must say the photography in the book is fantastic. Full color photos and lots of them. But there are many images I can imagine fans have never seen before, like Rodgers in high school and Butte Community College. Where did those come from?
Yeah, my publisher, Brian, for the most part, did a really good job of tracking down a lot of the art. And like you touched on some of the early stuff, which is terrific. And then it takes you right through the Super Bowl. So there's some really, really interesting and kind of fresh pictures from that game. I helped a little bit, Brian. I'll tell you a great story. I was talking to Aaron's junior college coach one day. His name is Craig Rigsby. He's out at Butte. He's actually the AD out there now. And I was on the phone with him for an hour or whatever, getting Aaron's stories. And when I finished, I said, if you guys have any pictures, of Aaron playing there, let me know. And about 2 minutes later, I got an email from Rigsby, and all these pictures came through, Brian, of Aaron wearing number 4. And maybe in the back of my mind, I knew that story at one point in time, but it kind of slipped my mind. And so immediately I called Rigsby back for, kind of the story again on why Aaron wore number 4 at Butte, because I think a lot of people forget that or maybe didn't even know it. And it's pretty wild. He went there, he asked for two different numbers first. He asked for 12 and 8. And when those were gone, he asked for 4, and Rigsby, the coach, said, why do you want to wear number 4, Aaron? And he said, because I love how Brett Favre plays. And we all know how that relationship turned out. But when Aaron was an 18-year-old kid and, as a freshman in a junior college, that was, one of his idols was Brett Favre. So those pictures of Aaron at Butte Wearing the number 4, I think, are fascinating and probably really interesting to the average fan and reader. And there's a lot of pictures like that inside the book, Brian. All the way back to his somewhat awkward, let's call it, high school photo and things to that effect. None of us like our high school pictures out there, but there really is, and there really is some terrific artwork inside this book. And like I joke with people, they needed it to compensate for my words. So
oh geez, I don't think that, but there's a lot of instantly recognizable photos too. The one with Rodgers and Favre, they're kind of making goofy hand signals with their red practice jersey on. There's the photo right. with Rodgers doing the back bump with former Packer Ruvell Martin that I think he actually uses for the background of his Twitter account. At least he did at one point. And the Super Bowl picture with him with the championship belt. All good keepsakes and mementos, I think. Anyhow, we're talking with Rob Reichel, author of the book, Aaron Rodgers, leader of the pack. Rob, what's a story the average person may not know about Aaron Rodgers you learned while researching this book?
A lot of his stuff from his youth, Brian, I guess I didn't realize how close he was to playing baseball, for example, when he came out of high school. I didn't know how little he was in high school. He showed up at, 5'2 and 130 pounds. And I mean, nobody in the high school thought he'd be a varsity quarterback, much less a Division I scholarship athlete at some point. I mean, he's just another little kid in the program at the time. He didn't have a great background or pedigree or anything to that effect. You know how it is, Brian, these days when kids are 15 years old or whatever and they show up at high school, they've already been to multiple camps and, they've got stars behind their names and from various recruiting services or whatever already. It doesn't take long, for a kid to build a resume. He had no resume at all when he showed up at high school. He was just another little kid in his class. And, he had a growth spurt in there, and he ended up graduating at, I want to say about 6'1", 180 or something like that, and then he put on another 10 or 20 pounds in that year where he was at Butte. So I guess I didn't realize right away, even that he overcame such great odds in high school. And another thing I found interesting, Brian, when he was at junior college, he showed up there, and they had a returning guy at Butte by the name of Brian Box, who everybody, according to the head coach back at the time, that I guess everybody really liked and loved and expected this Botts kid to be the quarterback in what, 02, I guess it would have been. And after fall camp, the head coach, Craig Rigsby, kind of asked everybody on his staff, well, who do you want to go with? And Aaron had a really good fall camp, but every other assistant coach on the team wanted to go with this Botts kid. And Rigsby, who was the head coach, said, you know what, this is why you guys pay me head coach money. We're gonna go with Aaron Rodgers. And a couple games later, this Botts kid transferred. A month and a half later, Jeff Tedford was in there looking at Aaron. The story has been widely reported, and it's inaccurate, that Tedford showed up that day to look at Garrett Cross. That apparently is not the true story. He was there strictly to see Aaron, and Garrett Cross ended up coming along for the ride, too. But, a month and a half, 2 months later, he's pretty much signed, sealed, and delivered to the University of California. And, the overwhelming theme in the book is just at every level, Aaron has overcome such obstacles to get to this point where he's probably, a top 10 player in the league and a top 3 to 5 quarterback. I knew the story, that he overcame, to by playing at a junior college, by playing at Cal. And sitting there for half a season at Cal by sitting so long in the green room and then sitting behind Brett Favre and then struggling through that 6-10 season of 08. But, all the way back to his days, even at 14, 15 years old, we're talking about a kid that really beat the odds. I mean, there's not a teacher inside his old school that worth about a dollar the kid probably would have ever played D1, much less been a Super Bowl MVP. So, it really is in a league right now, Brian, where we read about stabbings and drunk drivings and multiple arrests nonstop. It's a really refreshing story, I think.
That's interesting. You mentioned the story about Garrett Cross and Jeff Tedford going to recruit Aaron. I've heard that story many times, and it's always him going to look at Garrett Cross. So that's interesting that you mentioned
that.
Well, what is Aaron's reaction to the book, Ben? I assume he's seen it.
Well, you know Aaron, I think a little bit too, Brian. Aaron reads everything in the world that is out there about him, and he sees everything that is about him. But since the Super Bowl, I've not talked to Aaron. And again, this project kind of shifted gears during Super Bowl week, where you know I hadn't even talked to Aaron that I was going to do a book on him, because I wasn't going to bother him with this kind of stuff the week of the Super Bowl, obviously. So yeah, he and I actually haven't even talked since the season ended, but to your initial point, there's no question he's read the book, or I'm sure knows of the book by now. And and again, I think for the most part, the book is largely complimentary. You know, I certainly take you through his various lows as well as the highs. You know, the struggle he had in the summer of 05 and the playing time he got during the year in 06, and that everybody thought he was injury prone those first few years because he had the foot injury and he had the hamstring injury. And I mean, I had scouts, Brian, in the summer of 05 telling me Green Bay overreacted this kid at 24. So that is one thing I do try to take you through in the book, is that, you know, everything it wasn't just peaches and roses for Aaron Rodgers, you know. And, you know, back in when he was 22 in the summer of 05, a lot of people thought this was a ridiculous draft pick, and they could see why the kid fell to 24. And here he is a few years later, and he's the he's the Super Bowl MVP. But you know, to your initial question, I assume Aaron knows of the book, has seen the book, and probably appreciates the book. But I look forward to talking to him when this lockout ends. So
yes, and I'm sure most people would be happy to see this lockout end soon. How can people get this book, Rob? What's the best way for them to do it?
Yeah, thanks for asking. It's on all the major websites: the Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. My publisher, again, Brian, is TriumphBooks.com, so you can get it there. It's in all major retailers right now. And then if people do want just a signed copy, Brian, directly from me, they can just email me, and I'm RobReichel@gmail.com. So.
Very good. Rob, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We'll try to provide some links on our blog here to those addresses you just provided. And thanks for coming on the show and talking about the Packers this morning.
All right, it was my pleasure. Thank you, Brian.
Yep, take care. Rob Reichel of the book Aaron Rodgers, Leader of the Pack, joining us on Railbird Central this morning. Welcome, everyone. How are you on this Friday? What are we on here? May 6th now? Cinco de... What's 6 in Spanish? Yesterday was Cinco de Mayo. Not Seis de Mayo, huh? Don't ask me. I'm just the host. I don't know anything. But great to have you, everyone. If you want to comment, please feel free to tweet with the hashtags Railbird or the hashtags CheeseheadTV. All those tweets will get through to our blog. Or just feel free to comment. Your comments are being approved this morning by our moderator extraordinaire, Alex Talich, and I believe Jamie Lee are joining us as well. So thank you, and let's get right down to it. Thanks to once again Rob Reichel for joining us on the show. And at the bottom of the hour, we're going to be talking to Paul Guillemette about the recently completed NFL draft and some of the players the Packers took. Paul was a contributor to the Cheesehead TV NFL draft guide, but I provided a link at the top of this morning's blog to today's Packers Daily Links. If you scroll upwards, it's going to take you to a page that looks like this. And today's top story, the team, the Green Bay Packers, are surveying season ticket holders about some options they're considering about building in the south end zone of Lambeau Field, some seating. And if you click the very first link I provide, it'll take you to the Packers official website, packers.com, and a little bit from Mike Spofford. And he writes, quote, "On Thursday, an online survey was sent out to more than 30,000 season ticket holders, club seat holders, and individuals on the season ticket waiting list with details about some of the concepts being considered for the South End Zone. Later on, he writes, the various options being explored include bleacher seating, stadium seating, and standing room only areas. All the ideas involve outside seating with some areas under canopy cover and some with access to viewing platforms and lounge areas that include food and beverage packages. So I guess what I'm going to do this morning here is, throw out the question to the viewer here, the listener. What do you want to see come of the new south end zone seating areas, the expansion that the Packers plan to do? They provide some pictures, and we'll see how these look here on the broadcast screen. I'm just showing you what's on Packers.com right now, some of the concepts they have planned. And as you can see on your screen, I think one of their inspirations for this is Fenway Park at for the Boston Red Sox and some of the seating they have on top of the Green Monster. That's looks where some of these images are coming from, where you kind of have a little table in front of you and looks real nice. And there's other pictures of some concourse seating, looks like a little canopy overhead with concessions and things of that matter. And then they have other options. They're considering, not in, right now Lambeau Field is filled with mostly bleacher seats, but there is some stadium seating, as we can see here. And some other pictures here just looks like more stadium seating, perhaps club seating as well, in a concourse area. And finally, some bleachers with backs here. So if you were a season ticket holder, or if you are, happen to be listening to the show, what do you think of the options? What would you like to see them do at Lambeau Field? What kind of seating would you like to see? Do you like standing room only seats? I imagine if there's some stadium seating, you get your own nice chair, those are going to be a little more expensive. Whereas perhaps some standing room only seats. It feels weird to call standing room only a seat. Standing room only ticket, maybe. Maybe would be a little cheaper, perhaps. Would you like to see some cheaper options? But then, of course, if the Packers were to offer some cheaper options, how do you go about distributing those tickets? I'm sure that would kind of be an issue as well. Do you do it like the right now the Brown County seating, where residents of Brown County can apply to get seats in a special section for like one game a year, and you can put in, these annually you can apply for these tickets? Kurt Kozad comments on our live blog, nosebleed seats. They are going to be kind of higher up. I mean, this is expansion, so, nothing's going to be done here with the lower bowl area of Lambeau Field. John Rahor comments, I'd be all for more seats, but those seats look really high in the concept drawing. I guess that's the downside here. It's not like they're building a new stadium, so anybody getting seats now to the Packers games, you're going to be the low man on the totem pole, I guess. And I suppose I can throw out the question here. What do you think of, I've attended actually a game on a rooftop at Wrigley Field, and I thought it was a fantastic experience. Just, I loved the idea of spending a game on a rooftop of Wrigley Field. Now, I suppose, would I want to do that every game? Probably not. It was very enjoyable for a game, and I would certainly do it again, and perhaps as many as one time a season. But do you want to be that far away from the action if you are forced to get season tickets, if every game you get is going to be that far away? Now, I am talking rooftop here, and that's a little further away than a seat inside Lambeau Field. But, I'm just trying to gauge interest out there as to what fans think and their reaction to this and what the Packers appear set on doing at some point. Doesn't look, you know, I think they said the construction, I'm not sure when construction will begin. I know they're planning the new video boards for the 2012 season. So they're not going to be installed in time for 2011 here, but in time for 2012, it looks like. John Rahor comments, how about make the nosebleed seats non-season ticket eligible? And he also goes on to say, rooftop at Wrigley is more about the party on the roof than the actual game. And certainly, and that's why I say I enjoy going to the rooftop at Wrigley one time. You know, I do it once a year. I you know, it was great. I went with my wife, and we actually took in a Brewers game against the Cubs, and it's fantastic. But yeah, I mean, if you're a serious fan and you're actually interested in watching the game, that's not the best place to do it. Hammond comments, after sitting 15 to 20 rows from the top of Cowboy Stadium for Super Bowl XLV, nothing at Lambeau can seem like it's too high. So yeah, the seats within Cowboy Stadium, Jerry World, some of them pretty far away from the action. Some of the seats not even inside the stadium for Super Bowl XLV. Those who actually bought those, what were they, those $200 tickets where you're on a concourse outside the stadium. Kind of interesting how they did that. And certainly, I mean, we could get into a whole other debate here about how the ticket situation for the Super Bowl was handled. David comments, as long as the new seats meet fire code, we're good. Yeah, and, you know, a lot of the people say that, you know, it's the experience of Lambeau Field that counts. I mean, you're there, you're part of the action, and you're pretty good no matter where you are. I mean, you go to a game at Lambeau Field, the game itself is just part of it. It's the tailgating outside the stadium and, you know, taking in the concourse area and the atrium as well. So, you know, there's a lot more than just the seats, although certainly perhaps the seats might be the biggest factor in all of this. Jamie Jors comments, the people who bought the $200 seats were the only people colder than Brian and I. Yeah, Jamie and I happened to watch the game at one of those famous Packer bars in Dallas, outside in a tent. And it was cold in Dallas, as I'm sure everybody remembers, Super Bowl weekend. Other news today, making our Packers Daily Links. If you go back to our link and scroll down, the second story today, I found this to be a little bit interesting. A little research was done by ProFootballTalk.com about how various teams utilize their pre-draft visits. I think teams are allowed to conduct, if I'm correct, 30 pre-draft visits with college players prior to the draft that they can actually bring in to Lambeau Field and interview them there and perhaps work them out. I don't know all the details, but if you click this link and go to ProFootballTalk.com, Evan Silva takes a little bit of a closer look, and he writes, quote, the Texans, Bears, Jaguars, and Packers concern themselves almost strictly with late-round undrafted types when scheduling visits. For example, the player drafted earliest with whom we know the Green Bay formally visited was Markell Carter, the 194th overall pick. So, yeah, I mean, by taking a little bit of a closer look here, the Packers, you know, it very interesting. They're allowed to bring in whoever they want. You know, they don't have to bring in these undrafted types or, you know, the late round types. If they want to, they could have brought in Derek Sherrod, you know, just to meet with him and learn a little bit more about him. And you kind of almost wonder why they don't. I mean, if you're going to be investing millions of dollars into your first round draft choice, you know, why do you not want to get him a little bit more information as to who this person is? You're going to be paying, you know, with Derek Sherrod, they're going to be paying him $2 million a season. And if you happen to draft A.J. Hawk like they did with the fifth overall draft choice, I mean, you know, what was A.J. paid with his rookie contract? $8 million a season? And I realize as part of the whole collective bargaining agreement, this might be a moot point here in another season when, you know, there could be a rookie wage scale in place that will not pay them quite as high as they are now. So, but yeah, it just interesting to see. The only player that was on that list provided by Pro Football Talk, where they kind of tracked all the visits and workouts the Packers did and every team in the NFL, the Packers drafted Ryan Taylor, tight end from North Carolina in the seventh round. The only guy they worked out that they actually drafted. Now, certainly, some of the guys on that list could be undrafted free agent types the Packers may sign eventually, whenever this lockout ends or this stay is taken away from the NFL owners. So we could get a ruling on that as early as today. So I suggest go take a look at that article on at Pro Football Talk and take a look at some of the names that the Packers interviewed that were not drafted. And I'll do that here right now while we got just a minute or two here before the bottom of the hour and we take a little break and look at some of the names the Packers just may happen to sign in undrafted free agency. If I can scroll all the way down to the Packers here, where I can find them. Here we go. Baylor cornerback Antaris Bryan. I remember he's the speed demon who had some injuries at Baylor, but a very fast cornerback. East Carolina offensive tackle Willie Young. Yale fullback Shane Bannon. Colorado School of Mines linebacker Mark Schickel. South Dakota State tight end Colin Cochart. Southern Miss defensive tackle Anthony Gray. Delaware safety Anthony Walters. Washburn wide receiver Joe Hastings. So, some return specialists, Shaky Smithson and Jeremy Ross. So just names to keep in the back of your mind, you know, whenever undrafted free agency happens to come around, the Packers could perhaps be signing some of these players. We will see as time goes on. I'm going to take a break here. It's the bottom of the hour. When I come back, we're going to be talking to Paul Guillemette of the website PigskinPaul.com and the Cheesehead TV 2011 NFL Draft Guide. So hang tight with me for a moment, and we'll be right back.
This is Jared Bush from the Green Bay Packers, and you're watching Cheesehead TV.
Welcome back to Railbird Central on CheeseheadTV.com. I'm your host, Brian Caribou, and joining us right now on the line is Paul Guillemette of PigskinPaul.com. How are you doing this morning, Paul?
I'm doing good, Brian. I'm doing real well since we managed to connect today.
Yes, we had some issues last time we had our show here on Tuesday, but it's good to hear your voice this time. Paul,
thank you.
You were the contributor to the Cheesehead TV 2011 NFL Draft Guide. You're a draft expert, and what are your initial impressions on the 2011 draft class of the Green Bay Packers?
I, at this stage, without having given out any grades yet, and I'll wait another week or so, there's no doubt in my mind that this is a very strong effort for Ted Thompson and his helpers, like Santa and his elves up there at the North Pole. Solid group, should provide depth. I think there are three or four potential starters, I don't mean in 2011, but sometime within the next couple of years. And I will give Ted his usual credit. I sat here watching it for 3 days and pounding my fist, yelling about defensive linemen every time they came up to pick, but I will give Ted his due. He sticks to his plan. He sticks to his philosophy, and obviously it works. There's a Super Bowl trophy sitting up there right now. He stuck to his guns. They went for people that had the most value to them at their pick. And, again, they're in it. They were in the Super Bowl. They won it. You can't argue with success.
Exactly. And you talk about the Ted Thompson's elves at the North Pole, and people might take that literally, actually, with Darren College being from North Pole, Alaska, I think, if I remember correctly. But anyway.
Yes, yes.
Caleb Schlatter.
If he's still around any longer.
Yeah, that's true, being a free agent here. Paul, you wrote the defensive line and interior offensive lineman previews for the Cheesehead TV Draft Guide. What can you tell us about Caleb Schlatteroff, a guard from Utah?
Well, I think that the thing that's, I guess this is interesting, I don't know, I'll mention this just because obviously, anything that I can bring to the table is a little bit different than people can read in 16 other newspapers or magazines is probably what we're looking for. I wintered in the Orlando area this year, and that meant that I was at the Shrine Game week of practices and at the game. I was watching very carefully. I always pull a little shadow thing and kind of try to quietly, discreetly follow Ted Thompson around at these practices when he shows up in town.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I was slightly deceived, but maybe not. He always starts, my experience is at any practice that Ted Thompson attends, he always starts watching the offensive line group. That's the first group he goes to in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at his draft record, you can see where that comes. Ted Thompson, as he always says, you can never have enough offensive linemen, especially if they're good ones. And the Monday practice down here was rained out, typical Florida weather. We go for 2 weeks without any rain, and then when you finally get rain, you get about 3 inches in a half an hour. So basically, the afternoon practice, the first day of the Shrine practices, was rained out, and they used the master ballroom for a walk-through, run-through without pads for the players on that Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly thought, on Monday and Tuesday, I thought that Ted Thompson was really eyeballing Andrew Jackson, the offensive guard from Fresno State,
mm-hmm.
who Atlanta took in the seventh round. He's their kind of player, in my opinion, for their zone blocking scheme. But son of a gun, now that I look at it in retrospect, Brian, I can tell you for sure that on the occasions that I fought and felt he was watching Andrew Jackson, he probably was, but one of the guys that lined up right next to Jackson on more than one occasion was Caleb Schlatterhoff from Idaho. So whether he was
Utah.
Watching them both, which he probably was, or whatever, there was some interest. I think Schlatterhoff has a chance. I think he's a developmental project. I would not be shocked, depending on how the season plays out in the CBA, I would not be shocked if they don't try to stash Caleb on the practice squad this year,
mm-hmm.
because I think given his size and his physiology, I don't think he's going to be quite stout enough to play the tackle position, at least full-time in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to be looking to move him into the guard slot, and obviously that means work in progress. And you can only have so many of those on your 53-man roster or whatever the size is going to be. So I think he has some potential. He certainly, he may not be the world's greatest athlete, but he does not trip over his own feet. He does not fall down all the time. And I think given where he was taken, I didn't have him quite that high on my regardless list, but once you get past about 150 guys, now you might as well put a blindfold on and start shooting darts at the board as far as trying to compare their relative worth as an NFL prospect. That's what Dorsey, Whitey, and those guys get paid the big bucks for. And I do my newsletters and my website and make a couple hundred bucks a year, okay?
You mentioned the defensive line and how the Packers passed up some people, and I suppose that'll lead us right into here a discussion about the guy they did get, Lawrence Guy of Arizona State in the 7th round. What do you know about him, and perhaps who else could the Packers should have gotten or who they passed on? Whatever direction you want to take this in, feel free.
Sure. Well, I'll tell you what. My first thought was, I watched all of my draft coverage on ESPN, primarily because I can't get NFL Network down here.
You're not alone.
Believe it or not, I was surprised at this. Orlando's a pretty darn good-sized market, but the main cable supplier down here called Bright House Networks does not even offer NFL Network in a premier package of any kind. They just don't carry them.
Yeah,
which I find quite interesting.
The whole city of New York, I think, is in the same boat.
Yeah, someday when you get bored and there are no topics, if the CBA doesn't get settled, call me and we'll talk about NFL Network. But anyway, let's leave that alone for now. But my point was, by watching the ESPN coverage and with their trimmed down dais, which I really appreciated, of Berman Kuyper and John Gruden, and I really love this Gruden guy. But what I really was impressed about was they're picking other people, and all day long, the first 2 days, John Gruden's talking about the guy that the Packers are going to commit. He's saying, I love this guy. And now I get it. He loves Lawrence Guy. he's enthralled with him. So I do think it's a good pick. When you get to the 7th round of the NFL draft, unless you're drafting for a real specific need and think you've found a gem, I think what you really get down to is start picking guys that maybe had an okay college career, but your scouting staff feels has big-time potential, big upside. And I believe that that's how they're viewing Lawrence Guy. I don't think there are any serious off-field issues with him. I think there may be some slight attitude issues with him, ego-wise, mm-hmm. I guess is the best way to put it. But I don't think they're anything evil. I don't think they're insurmountable. And as has been said many times by many of us, let's get real. If you don't have a healthy-sized ego, you probably aren't going to succeed as a professional athlete. The stakes are just too high, and you've got to have that inner reserve. He certainly fits the bill physically. I think he could put on another 10, 15 pounds and get up to 315 or 320. And for a 3-4 scheme, he fits it well. On a good day, I think you could also look at him physically and say that when they go to that Eagle-style defense, and by that I mean they're two defensive linemen, which they often go to, he certainly has the physical tools to fit into that kind of role as mm-hmm. compared to some of the other guys on the roster. So I think he's got a chance. They'll give him a strong chance. He might be a practice squad guy, but I think at this stage of the game, his name is well-known enough. If he shows very much in a Packer training camp, it will be hard to hide him and stash him. I think there will be other teams that would take a look at him. So he may more likely be one of the scenarios where he's going to have to earn his way onto that 53-man roster or have an injury, or they would probably lose him.
Okay, very interesting. One thing I kind of noticed in the draft guide, you kind of pointed at some players the Packers wouldn't target at all that just kind of don't fit their 3-4 defense. And, respectfully disagreeing, Nick Fairley wasn't on your list. And not that the Packers ever had a chance of drafting Nick Fairley, but I mean, had he dropped all the way to number 32, I just think the guy is an animal enough. You can't pass a player like that. What do you look at when you're looking at players who don't fit the system? Because, I mean, you had a whole list of a Marvin Austin and, I can't rattle them all off the top of my head. But what do you look at in a player who may fit or not fit the Packers system?
A multiplicity of things, Brian, but some of the key ones would be, believe it or not, something as simple as you take a look at their height and their weight.
Mm-hmm.
You look at charts and study this enough, and there are definitive, there's always an exception to every rule, we mm-hmm. know that. But there are definitive averages, medians, guidelines for NFL players at certain positions, and you'll go to a roster, and inevitably you will find that probably, I'll pick a number out of my behind here, 90% of the guys at positions fit the NFL stereotype or median for that position.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean they can't do other things, and there are guys that can, but that ends up being one of them. The other thing that I look for in, if you're looking at a 3-4 scheme like the Packers run, you're looking at one of two things, and this is where you're right. Had Fairley dropped to 32, I would have been sitting there screaming for them to take him. Absolutely. No doubt about it. But I think the thing that I look for is, for instance, let's take Fairley. Fairley I was in love with Nick Fairley and the way he played, and I also kind of like the way, even though some people call him dirty, I like his kind of aggressive attitude, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
Some teams needed a little bit. I think the Packers needed more of that a few years ago, and they've actually, I feel, brought in some players that have a little bit nastier disposition at certain positions, mm-hmm. and are that's part of the improvement on the team. But to me, a guy like Fairley, even though he looks a lot bigger than he is to me when he puts the pads on and gets out there, but a Nick Fairley, in my opinion, in the NFL, who hovers right around the 300-pound mark, give or take 5 pounds either way,
yep.
and stands, you know, a little bit over 6'3", that's not really stout enough to stand in there or crouch in there at the nose in a 3-4
mm-hmm.
and take a pounding all day, as opposed to a B.J. Raji, who, you know, was the ideal scenario for a nose-type position because he's barely 6'2". And, you know, if he skips breakfast, he might come in at 335 right now. And that's the kind of guy you need, unless you're really going to rotate people like crazy. And when you're drafting top players, you can't do that. I also look for, conversely, let's say, Brian, a defensive end. I'm looking for a guy for a 3-4 scheme that's solid enough that their prime job is anchoring against the run.
Mm-hmm.
You know, defensive ends in a 3-4 scheme are not traditionally pass rushers.
Yep.
You get your pass rush in zone blitz situations, and it doesn't even have to be linebackers, which is why I'm digressing, but I won't go too far, which is why I'm not that worried that they didn't draft the next Clay Matthews to play on the other side. You know, you get zone blitz schemes. You know, Charles Woodson blitzed a heck of a lot the last couple of seasons, mm-hmm. and it worked really well as long as you got a guy that can do it. So, when you look at a defensive end in a 3-4 scheme, the number one priority is someone who can get out there, plant their feet, get his hands on the offensive tackle, and A, either contain the run if they're running to that side of the field, or B, get the tackle a little bit off balance and on the defensive and either open up a lane for somebody to come blitzing from the corner, the safety, or the linebacker position, and then have enough athleticism that if the tackle panics and sees that and deserts you, you've got enough speed and athleticism to put some pass rush on yourself. Those are the kind of guys, you know, those are the kind of things that I look at when I say, you know, a Carlton Bailey or a Nick Fairley isn't big enough to anchor, and he's probably not quite, he's stout enough, but he's probably not quite light enough on his feet to play that defensive end position. But mm-hmm. yes, as you pointed out, yeah, if he falls to them, it's kind of a no-brainer like Aaron Rodgers here.
Fantastic analysis. Paul, you said you attended the Shrine game. Am I correct? Did you attend the Senior Bowl as well this year?
Oh, yes, I've been to the Senior Bowl. Now that's the wheelhouse. Yes, I've been to the Senior Bowl now for 13 straight years.
Okay, so you've got a little bit of an insider perspective here. You've seen these guys up close and personal. Who are some of the, perhaps, is there a guy we should be waiting on that the Packers may sign in undrafted free agency here?
that's a huge crapshoot. Obviously, I have some guys that I wouldn't mind seeing them snap up out there. And bottom line is, Brian, it's real simple. For me, they're the guys that were, in my top 100 to 150 list that never got drafted. A few of them don't fit the Packers scheme, so, you don't go there. But I look at a guy, a couple of guys, again, I'm going to say, let me give you a couple of defensive linemen.
Okay.
Because I still think they need to bring in a couple more bodies at that position who have a chance to contribute in case somebody gets hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And the two that stick out in my mind, the number one is a kid that was at the Senior Bowl, and he was a last-minute fill-in because you had a few of the bigger-name guys
mm-hmm.
who decide, they were expecting that Spellman was going to, or Hayward, Alonzo Hayward, Cameron Hayward was going to come down here
mm-hmm.
to the Senior Bowl in Mobile. But because he had the elbow injury in the bowl game, he didn't show up.
Yep.
Good excuse. Anyway, they brought in at the last minute a kid from South Arkansas named Cedric Thornton,
mm-hmm.
who's 6'4", 300 pounds. And, Brian, again, I look at the rosters the day before the game. They don't get them to us real early down there because they're filling in so many gaps at the last minute. And I'm looking at the roster, and I'm saying, yeah, okay, I'm glad the kid's here along with two or three other D2 schools, but, this isn't going to be somebody that I'm going to spend a whole lot of time watching this week.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time the first practice was done and the weigh-in was done, I had my eyeballs on this guy the rest of the week, and I confess, I got carried away. It's like some out-of-town girl shows up for the senior prom, and compared to the local talent, it's like, wow, where did she come from? I confess, I think I fell in love with Cedric Thornton, love at first sight. Probably not as good. Originally, I had him in my top 100, and I kind of had to back him out into the fourth, fifth round mm-hmm. range. But I was surprised when he did not go. And I think his size, he's comparable in size roughly to Lawrence Guy.
Mm-hmm.
He, from what I saw in Mobile, he is much more athletic. And perhaps it was because he came from D2 school and was playing against the big boys and had something to prove. But again, I loved his attitude. He did not back down the entire week. He competed with the big guys. And one of the things that struck me, Brian, that, again, this will sound anal, but when you're trying to really differentiate all of these 500-600 guys that could possibly get drafted and whittle that list at least in half, if not more, you look for this kind of thing. I really, at a game, at these All-Star games, I can get turned on, so to speak, by how hard and how well some of these guys practice. And even in the position drills, everybody gets excited at the Senior Bowl, let's say, and they really pay attention when you get to the last half hour, 45 minutes of each practice, and they break into their 11-on-11, basically, scrimmage.
Yeah.
And that's fine, because at certain positions, you really need to see that to see what some people can do.
Yep.
But I really get excited about guys that put it out on the line on every drill they do, including, some of the most mundane-looking positional drills. And Cedric Thornton did that. For instance, another guy, it's digression, but I was really high on him, and I actually had the Packers taking him at the end of the round in their mock, but he didn't last that long. Everybody fell in love with Danny Watkins of Baylor,
mm-hmm.
the offensive tackle. He moved to guard for the Senior Bowl week, and it looked natural. And what really impressed people was he had almost too much attitude. None of the defensive linemen wanted any part of this guy because with his hockey background, he played like it. He never heard the whistle. He just kept walking. And Cedric Thornton never heard the whistle. He either took one more hit at somebody or he popped the pads one more time. And I'm really surprised he did not get drafted. Perhaps something came up the physical, perhaps something came up, maybe his Wonderlic was a minus one or something. But assuming that there was nothing like that, couldn't sign his name to the program or something, I really think he has a possibility as a rookie free agent. One more guy I liked right down the road from us, when I lived in Wisconsin down the road from us. I really thought as a senior, Corbin Bryant, the defensive tackle from Northwestern University, came on and showed really well. He was the top defensive lineman on the Northwestern squad, mm-hmm. was a team leader. He bulked up to 6'4", 302 pounds for the Senior Bowl. Did not look fat or fleshy at all. And I think he, again, is athletic enough that he might make a very good fit with the flexibility that you need to play on the defensive line for Dom Capers. And you have to have that to play for Dom Capers. You cannot be a one-trick pony. You can't just be a big guy. You can't just be a fast guy. You need to have the entire package, and you have to have the brains mm-hmm. to get out there, understand your job, understand what you needed to do, and then be athletic enough to do it. And I could see Corbin Bryant having a chance as an end as opposed to a nose tackle in that scheme. So those are two guys that I think, high energy, high motor. The other guy, I'd love to see them pick up. It has nothing to do with defensive line, just because of the connection and the fact that, again, he's a hard-nosed player and a productive player. I would love to see the Packers bring in Nick Ballore from Central Michigan, mm-hmm. a Wisconsin boy, and see if he could earn himself a job. As I'm guessing that as camp gets underway, the Packers are going to have to whittle down that inside linebacker position from a money standpoint.
Yep.
And I think there could be a job open for, the fourth or fifth inside linebacker who's a special teams demon mm-hmm. and is smart enough and physical enough. And if I remember right, Brian, I don't have the number in front of me, but Nick Ballore, of anybody outside of a skill position player, had the highest Wunderlich at the combine. He was well into the 30s.
Yeah.
And again, that's a Teddy Thompson / Whitey kind of pick. And by the way, I wanted to explain that because I know you've chuckled at it a few times. I refer to Ted Thompson as Whitey because, believe it or not, that is his nickname amongst many of his peers, the guys that have been around the scouting, et cetera. When I see him down at the Senior Bowl, more often than not, when somebody's walking past that's a scout or personnel person and they know him, they don't call him Ted. It's Whitey. Hey, Whitey, how you doing? And, he does look like somewhere between Mr. Clean and the White Knight. So I think Whitey's a great nickname for Ted Thompson.
I think so. Fantastic stuff here, Paul. Talked to Nick Ballore at the NFL Combine, and he was a three-time captain, and I think that kind of came across as a feather in his cap as well. Who the heck makes a captain their sophomore year in college? So that in itself was kind of impressive. Congratulations on placing third among all noted draft experts in the top 100 picks, ahead of Mike Mayock, Mel Kiper. So congratulations on that, Paul. We put that on our blog.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I suppose you were kind and didn't mention, though, that as far as the mock was concerned, I was running in place in that race.
Yeah, that's all right. We'll overlook that. So, we can't all be Rick Goslin. So
there you go. And I did beat Rick in the top 100. And to be honest with you, Brian, I was happier. Thank you for your thank you. I appreciate that. And I was happier. I would rather do well in that than the mock, mm-hmm. because on my site, if people go to pigskinpaul.com and follow me as we lead up to the draft, my comment, and this basically is what the NFL teams are doing. This is what Whitey and the guys are doing. It is much more important, in my opinion, to form a solid, accurate ranking system from 1 to 350 or so mm-hmm. of all the players at all the positions, as opposed to just trying to outguess what team's going to pick who in the first round.
Yeah.
Because basically, when they talk about draft board or a value board, that's this kind of list that we're talking about. And tell you what, when you get to the fifth or sixth round and you're starting to run out of names of people you know, it's really easy to go to the top 100 list and say, oh, wow, nobody took my 101st ranked player. Let's go get him. I don't care what position he plays. That guy's too good to be sitting out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, I'd rather do well in that than the mock, but I got to study up a little bit more in my mock next year.
Paul, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Take care, and we'll do this again.
All right. Always there for you whenever, Brian, and you guys keep doing the great work that you do. We really appreciate it as Packer fans. Take care, buddy.
Thanks. See ya. Paul Guillemette of PigskinPaul.com and the Cheesehead TV 2011 NFL Draft Guide. Fantastic show today. This is the best show in a long time, I think, because I talked the least. We had Rob Reichel at the beginning of the show, Paul Guillemette in the second half, and I barely talked at all today. That is a good day in Railbird Central Land. No, I'm happy to talk too, but just sitting back and listening to some very knowledgeable people, I can't tell you how immensely I enjoy that. Enjoy the weekend, everyone. It's just about 9 o'clock. I'll throw this out there. I'm probably going to put up a post later. You know, I'm a big Kentucky Derby fan. If you follow me on Twitter, you know that. I've been to the Kentucky Derby in 2008, and I wish I was going this year. Here's the deal. Actually, tonight, there's always these posh, and believe me when I say posh, parties the night before the Kentucky Derby, and there's two of them this year. The most posh of them all, and the one that gets the most attention, is the Barnstable Brown Kentucky Derby pre-party this evening. Aaron Rodgers is going to be there. And there's another party, not quite the Barnstable Brown, the status of that, but there's another party being held tonight in Louisville, Kentucky, hosted by some former Packers, quarterback Brian Brohm and tackle Breno Giacomini, who both played at the University of Louisville. That's their alma mater. And they're having some former Packers attend this party as well. Randall Cobb, who the Packers just drafted, is he's from Kentucky, so the word on the street is he's going to be there. I've heard, I think it was on Twitter, that Bart Starr is going to be there, and Paul Hornung is a native of Louisville, Kentucky. I wish I could have gone this year and just to cover the event for the Packers perspective. So you may be seeing more about the Green Bay Packers this weekend than you ever thought, just because so many of them are going to be in Sports Central this weekend in Louisville, Kentucky. So very, very interesting. And anyway, enjoy the Kentucky Derby, everyone. Here's the name to watch. Remember, you heard it here first. Midnight Interlude. There's my pick for the Kentucky Derby. Go place a sawbuck on them and make yourself some money. See, everyone, it's been a great episode of Railbird Central. We'll talk to you perhaps next week. I say I'm going on vacation next week. I don't know my schedule yet, so I'll keep you apprised on Twitter. Take care, everyone.